Actually, you might want to stand because our sermon text is from the Gospels. Matthew 18, verses 1 through 4. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child and had him stand among them. And he said, "I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." The word of the Lord. Okay, you can be seated. So this same passage that we're looking at today, we can also find not only in Matthew, but in Mark and Luke. It's not a one-off story. It was obviously so important and so memorable that three of the four Gospels relate these words of Jesus. In this passage, we find that the disciples were involved in a very adult endeavor, comparing themselves with each other, arguing over the secrets of greatness, and competing with each other for acclaim and recognition. Very adult. Jesus wouldn't have anything to do with such nonsense. Instead, he called for a child to come and stand in their midst. Then he tells them that to be great in the kingdom of God, in the kingdom of heaven, they must become like this child. Now notice the emphasis that Jesus puts upon change. Those of us who are, like the disciples, adult followers of Christ, he says must become like little children. Jesus is speaking to adults and calling them to what? Be like children. Now, I don't believe that Jesus is calling us to be childish. He doesn't want us to be ignorant or irresponsible, self-centered, the way that children, well, sometimes can be. He doesn't want us to be gullible or foolish or easily manipulated. He isn't asking us to be children. He wants us to become like children. To become childlike. What's implied here by the call to become childlike is that this is frankly not our natural tendency as we grow into adulthood. It's not our default way of being. Instead, it's a choice we must make. It's a decision. So why would Jesus call us to be childlike? Well, I think it's because when we were children, most of us possessed a number of really wonderful qualities. When we were children, we were curious. We wanted to learn more, experience more, make more sense out of the world around us. We asked lots of questions. Sometimes we ask so many questions that our parents became a little bit irritated with our inquisitiveness. One researcher, in fact, found that the average child asks 73 questions every day. Yikes, right? But we ask questions because we wanted to learn more, to expand our understanding. We like to explore new places, meet new people, go where we hadn't gone before. We were explorers who lived in awe of the kind of magical world that was around us. When we were children, we were creative and imaginative. We loved to make new things, to draw and build things and tell stories. I remember that I had a whole box full of stuffed animals. To me, thanks to my imagination, each of these stuffed critters took on their their own personalities. And I made up stories about them and acted out the imagined conversations between my stuffed animals. And I found lots of outlets for my creativity. I would sit on the swings behind my house and I would make up songs, which I sang at the top of my voice, much to the joy, I'm certain, of my neighbors. Sometimes I pretended like I was the star of my own self-created movies. I love to use my crayons and paints to make pictures. Can you identify? Kids are creative. It's only as they get older that they become self-conscious about their creativity. And unfortunately, develop the idea that their own creative and artistic creations somehow aren't worthy in comparison to those made by others. And so, we kind of quit being creative. How sad that so many lose their natural creative gifts because they quit using them. When we were children, we were open and accepting of others. We liked to make new friends. We didn't put people in a box or discriminate against those who were different than us. In fact, we were fascinated by the differences. Our parents probably had to teach us to be suspicious of strangers and cautious of people we didn't know. We were recklessly friendly. Unfortunately, from our parents, we might have learned prejudices and negative attitudes toward those who weren't like us. But we had to learn this negativity, for we were naturally more open-hearted toward others. When we were children, we were fearless. We'd push the boundaries of common sense, and sometimes we paid the price for it. But when we fell down, we'd usually pop back up and keep going, unless someone was watching, and then we'd cry a little bit to get the attention we could, and then we'd pop up and get going. We thought ourselves indestructible, and we weren't so afraid to fail. We didn't worry about being laughed at because we were being silly or a bit naive. We were quick to move on, to forgive and forget, and to just keep going. When we were children, we were easily amused. You could buy us an expensive toy, and we'd often end up spending more time playing with the box that it came in. We'd laugh at almost anything, particularly if it was just a little bit gross and vulgar. We thought farts were hilarious. So was snorting milk out your nose when you laughed really hard. And we were quick to see the humor all around us. When we were children, we found it easy to believe. Kids find it easy to believe in fairies, magic, or imaginary friends. No one could convince us otherwise. We are quick to accept things that are more magical than what our eyes revealed. And we didn't think twice about believing in the reality of things that we couldn't actually see with our eyes. And then something happened. Life came around, and they kicked us around. All the hard things that happened to us tried to destroy our innocence and childlike simplicity. The difficult experiences we faced in our lives maybe left so many of those good things that were inside us in pieces. In the process of becoming an adult, most of us lost a lot of the best things about being a child. So now we're adults. We know better. Life has hardened us. It's made us skeptical, cynical, suspicious, and sometimes filled us with shame. We've seen too much and experienced too much, and much of it was very painful. And these experiences broke something precious within us. We've lost many of our childlike qualities. For unlike children, adults can hold grudges for a very long time, can remember slights, stay angry, and refuse to forgive. Adults can harbor fears and prejudices that get in the way of our relationships with other people. Adults can lose hope because in the past their hopes have been dashed and destroyed too many times for us to keep on believing. Adults can construct narrow ideologies and beliefs that protect them from having to continue to think and to ask questions. They refuse to believe or to deal with the new data that might contradict what they've already decided that they believe. They don't want to admit that they might actually be wrong about some parts of their theology or their politics or their philosophy of life. And they will aggressively argue with anyone who offers a different perspective. Adults can go on doing things just because, well, they've always been done that way. And we have trouble imagining different options. We don't like to be forced out of our comfort zone. We don't want anyone to challenge us. We'd rather be affirmed than actually have to wrestle with hard questions. Adults can lose their innocence, their simplicity, their joy, and their trust. Their trust in themselves, their trust in their family and friends, and their trust in God. As we grow older, it's too easy for us to lose our confidence, lose our contentment, and lose our innocence. Our hearts become hardened, our priorities become confused, and our deepest hopes are sometimes dashed. But Jesus' words in Matthew 18 hold the promise that we don't have to live our lives like a hurt and broken adult. We can choose a new way of living, regaining the joy and purpose and wholeness that we had as a child. We can become childlike again. In the midst of all our struggles, we're offered another chance at that childlike innocence, that childlike attitude, that childlike faith. I like to think of this as the title of my sermon, Second Innocence. It's the innocence that we find on the other side of all the hard things that we've gone through. We can't just jump into a time machine and go back. We can't rewrite our history. We can't undo some of the terrible things that have been done to us. That's not possible. But we don't have to be stuck with a broken and adult way of seeing life. We don't have to settle for where we are right now. We can, with God's help, recapture some of what we've lost. We can experience the joy and the meaning that can be found in a second innocence. So what does it look like to live in second innocence? I think it starts, as Jesus said, with humility, with humbling ourselves, with being willing to reorient our lives and make the changes that need to be made. To move away from pride. To move away from our focus on self-promotion, on self-protection, and on self-absorption. We may have to let go of a little of what we see as our dignity. And even be willing to appear a bit foolish in the eyes of others. To live in the joy of second innocence means to love like a child, to believe like a child and to see like a child. So let's, as all good sermons do with 3 points, briefly look at each of those qualities. We can learn to love like a child. All of us want to be loved. It is the deepest, greatest, grandest desire of every human heart. The ultimate thing that we strive and search for. But sometimes, the harder we try to be loved, the less lovable we actually are. The more sadly desperate we seem. And ugliest of all, we can become jealous of how others are being loved, and we can want that love exclusively for ourselves. So we need to be more like a child, open to giving and receiving love, rather than manipulating others in our attempt to earn it or win it or force others into feeling it for us. The beauty of the love of a child is in its vulnerability and its generosity. We must ask ourselves, am I willing to take the risk of love, of being hurt and misunderstood and even rejected? Am I willing to cede some of my advantage in my relationships, relinquishing my attempts to control every situation? Am I willing to be more vulnerable? For if we're not willing to be vulnerable, we will find it very difficult to love others and to receive love in return. The truth is that giving ourselves to others with love, with our whole heart, isn't safe. It always involves risk. But love takes that first step. And we must ask ourselves, am I willing to love with extravagance? Am I willing to be so generous with my love that I put the needs of others ahead of my own desires and my own convenience? Or do I require people to earn my love and respect? To earn it? Or do we offer it freely and generously, the way a child does? As we love with extravagance, we come closest to loving in the way that God loves. For God's grace is all about his extravagant and unearned love toward us. Yes, it is the choice to embrace vulnerability and generosity which allows us to love with all the strength of a second innocence. We can learn to believe like a child. Another of the characteristics of childlikeness is having a simple trust in God. A child is open-hearted to others and open-hearted toward God. A childlike faith doesn't require having everything figured out, every question answered, and every concern alleviated. We don't have to have everything figured out to follow Jesus. We might still have questions, some of them perhaps uncomfortable and seemingly unanswerable. We might lie awake in our beds at night and find our minds flooded with doubts and questions and uncertainty. We might not know how to answer all the criticisms of the cynics and the skeptics. But that does not preclude us from believing. In fact, having faith means that we believe in things we cannot fully see or completely understand. There was a time when I thought that if I worked hard at it, that I would be able to figure basically everything out. To give a rational answer to every criticism raised against faith and work out a system that made sense of everything in the world around me. I read lots of theology and apologetics and cultural criticisms. I spent a lot of time reading and studying the Bible. I talked with the wisest and smartest people I knew. And with a strategy like this, I was confident that eventually I'd be able to set aside all my doubts and be able to believe with full confidence. Yeah. Doesn't work that way. I was looking for certainty. I thought my intellectual endeavors could eventually create a wall of protection from my doubts. Instead, what I've discovered is that most questions are kind of like Russian nesting dolls. That there is usually one question nestled inside of another one, and that one inside of yet another one. The deeper down you go, the further into the rabbit hole, the more confusing things become, if you're actually going to be honest with yourself. You don't eventually stop needing to ask questions. Instead, the questions get more complicated and more complex. And finally, you learn, as Socrates famously said, that the mark of a wise person is knowing how little that you actually know. Childlike faith, though, sees the wisdom to be found in embracing our ignorance. As I'm trying to embrace a more childlike faith, I'm still that child who asks a lot of questions, maybe more than ever. But living in second innocence, I'm okay that there seem to be a lot of questions that I just can't answer. And maybe some of them I never will. That doesn't keep me from believing. That doesn't keep me from trusting God. For my faith is not in the intellectual potency of the system that I happen to be able to construct to tackle life's biggest issues. My faith is in the God who is bigger than all my doubts and questions. To have a childlike faith means I need to stop caring, or doesn't mean I need to stop caring about asking the questions. It means I will keep asking them, but that I will decide to trust him in the face of whatever mysteries still remain. It means that I am mature enough to know how little I know. It means that I'm okay to live with some uncertainty. It means affirming that some things exist in the realm of mystery. In the face of all that, I will choose to believe. But my belief is not some sort of intellectual mind game. My belief is in the living God. In God, I will believe because in God, I can trust. One of the most helpful scriptures for embracing a childlike faith and a second innocence can be found in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. It's one probably most of us know. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. In the midst of our confusion and fear, we can trust him to guide us through the challenges of life. It won't always be an easy path. It might not always be a path that we would choose. But it will be a straight path. A path that leads to true peace and true contentment. Yes, it is the choice to trust in God that allows us to believe with all the confidence of a second innocence. And finally, we can learn to see like a child. Think back for a moment to the time when you were younger and how you experienced the world at that time. I think it's safe to say that most of us were pretty fascinated by the world around us. We saw it with immediacy, with enthusiasm, abundant curiosity, and an open-heartedness. I remember spending time on my grandmother's back porch watching the ants. Grandma would make sandwiches with mayonnaise and Velveeta cheese. I never really liked those sandwiches very much. So I'd be happy to share them with the tiny little ant colony that lived somewhere nearby. I'd break off pieces and I'd drop them on the porch. Then I'd watch as the ants struggled to take them away to their nest. Sometimes one ant could carry a piece, dragging it all along by itself, but other times it would take three or four ants who would to organize themselves so that they could haul away one of the larger pieces of Velveeta cheese and mayonnaise and bread. But I loved to watch them, and I could spend a very, very long time fascinated by those little critters. These days, I don't spend as much time doing things like watching the ants. And I think I'm the lesser for it. But I'm learning to slow down and pay more attention to the world around me, to all the beauty, large and small, that surrounds me. A tree whose leaves are rustling in the wind, the sound of a bird's song. I put that in for you, Janet. A small flower that pushes itself up between the cracks in the concrete. The startling colors of a summer sunset. The pulsing roar of the ocean. A breathtaking vista from the top of a mountain. As I pay attention to such things, I think I'm seeing like a child. These are the kind of things that awaken in me a childlike sense of wonder. They create moments that I can't really describe in words, but they arouse in me a sense of awe. They are a reminder of a beautiful reality that can be glimpsed even in the midst of our broken and fallen world. They access a deeper and often neglected part of my soul. Psalm 19 tells us, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge." Such visions of beauty and wonder are, as the psalmist is telling us, a way that God communicates with his people. The question is, are we listening? Are we paying attention? Or are we just walking by? Often, I'm afraid, we're sleepwalking through our lives. We are busy. We're distracted. We have important adult things to do. We just can't spare the time. And so our senses become dulled and asleep. We become indifferent, world-weary, complacent. But if we pay attention, we will learn to see again, to see the way that a child sees. Our openness and curiosity will create a space for experiencing those little epiphanies where God appears to us in unexpected ways, often incognito. We can learn to see anew, standing humbly before life's mysteries, for in them we will encounter God. As G.K. Chesterton wrote, "One of the deepest and strangest of all human moods is the mood which will suddenly strike us, perhaps in a garden at night or deep in a sloping meadow, the feeling that every flower and leaf has uttered something stupendously direct and important, and that we have, by a prodigy of imbecility," that's a good phrase, "by a prodigy of imbecility, not heard or understood it." There is a certain poetic value, and that a genuine one, in this sense of having missed the full meaning of things. There is beauty not only in wisdom, but in this dazed and dramatic ignorance. Thank you, Chesterton. I think that's exactly right. But we must choose that childlike vision, allowing our heart to be filled with awe. We must choose to practice letting awe become our way of seeing the world, of seeing the people around us. And that experience of awe will lead us to a feeling of gratitude and a desire to worship. It will inspire us, I think, to thank God for the humble beauty all around us, the glory to be found in the smallest of things, even a little ant. Yes, it is the choice to seek out the wonder around us that allows us to see with all the beauty of second innocence. So, I'd like to challenge you as Jesus challenged his disciples. Choose to become a child again. Lay aside the brokenness of trying to be the adult who thinks they always have to have everything figured out, who are stingy and fearful with their love and affection, and who are dulled to the mysterious and miraculous world around them. Embrace your second innocence. Let Jesus show you a new childlike way to live with love and trust and a vision for the glories that he has scattered abroad in his world. Take your place again as a beloved child of God. Amen.